You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans. Welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 485. We're here to do our recap. Randall's joining me as well. Randall, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
And are you ready to talk about this matchup? Notre Dame's, again, another one-possession game, but this one really, really was close. It was as close at the end as the score was at the end.
This is the first time in Notre Dame's three games that I thought they might actually lose.
Okay. We're going to, of course, talk about that, our thoughts, what we got right, what we got wrong. And the big question, why does Notre Dame seem to stall? Or why do, clearly it's more than just steaming. Why do they stall? Why aren't they able to put teams away where there's an advantage athletically? Why are they not able to do that? And I think in a lot of instances they have the coaches that should be putting teams away. Notre Dame didn't drop in the polls. They're still number 8. However, that really doesn't matter. But what does matter is they did win the game. They're 3-0, which is much better than any drop or rising in the ranking at this point. At this point, who cares what the rankings are? And they're probably, in my opinion, the Notre Dame is ranked higher than what they should be. But the important thing is they're 3-0. They're in great position to they're where you want to be. At 3 games in, they're 3-0.
I guess a little bit of consolation was after the game, you know, once we saw all these other teams losing on Saturday, you know, how the teams that weren't supposed to lose, Wisconsin losing is a big one. Some of those games, it made this win look a little bit better. But you have to look at it, they're 3-0. A lot of teams can't say that after Saturday. So, yeah.
Let's talk about some of the things we got right and some of the things we got wrong. Right off the bat, clearly I called with my score prediction, expecting Notre Dame to cover this game. They did not cover, not come close. Randall had them under the 14-point spread, but you had a bigger margin of victory than the 5 points ended up being. And so the big thing I expected was Notre Dame to come out to snap out of the funk they were in versus Ball State. And I credited a lot of that funk, in quotation marks, to offensive play calling. I thought the defense played very well against Ball State. Ball State just made plays and moved the ball. But I expected the play calling to be a little more aggressive and a little more effective and not as conservative. And I thought for about 2 offensive drives and 2 defensive drives, I thought I was going to be right. And I was right for, you know, the first half of the quarter. However, Notre Dame was in a position again at the end of the game where it could have been either a tie or a loss.
Yeah. Well, I noticed in rewatching the game, clearly knowing the outcome, how the first half actually seemed like Notre Dame was going to walk away with it. I mean, run away with it, I guess you could say. But then things did kind of change at halftime, and it wasn't quite, rewatching it didn't feel quite as bad as watching it in the actual game was happening. So, but yeah, there's a lot of things. I think this team, with what Brian Kelly mentioned in his post-game press conference, is that this team is not great. He said, tap the brakes on the greatness columns, but he said they're getting there and they need to fix, there's a bunch of small things they need to fix to get to the details that they can get to that greatness.
Yeah, clearly Notre Dame is not Alabama. And after the 2012 season when Notre Dame lost to Alabama.
Thank goodness they're not. Notre Dame students go to class.
When Notre Dame was blown out by Alabama in the championship game, there was a clear, huge divide between the two programs. And that divide in week 3 of the season is still apparent. Alabama has blown teams out, blown some quality teams out. Teams are as good as Notre Dame has played in the first 3 weeks, and they've blown them out. That doesn't mean that Notre Dame is in an awful position. It doesn't mean that they're 10 years away from getting to the playoff. I mean, they might be, but I don't think that's necessarily 3 weeks in that you can say that definitely Notre Dame is 10 years away or is nowhere close with Brian Kelly at the helm. I'm one of the more optimistic, I think, fans when it comes to the coaching staff. I think Brian Kelly does have a good staff in place. And I think that's where it starts, is with coaching.
Yeah. I do feel like it's become, it almost seems like Brian Kelly's kind of old news. And after the game, it was a little depressing. Just thinking about it, this and everything just seems kind of down right now. But it does feel like, Brian Kelly's been here for a while, and it feels like a lot of fans are just kind of, it's like old news.
Hey, after last season.
I feel pretty good about the football team. I mean, they're winning. And you can see they got better from last week. And I have a list of things that if, these small things would have changed, even half of these would have changed, it would have probably been a blowout win.
Let's talk about those things, Randall. But let's also talk about where the issue lies, or where we put the majority of the blame, or how it should be fixed in each of those things. So, and this was a discussion over on the forums, by the way, forums.irishsportstalk.net.
This has been one of the longest discussions. I mean, the posts are like, small stories.
But go ahead. What are the?
Well. Okay, there's a list. I didn't even count how many there were. But basically, things I saw go wrong this game that could have completely changed it was the first drive. I did not. We disagreed about this a little bit.
And
but
man,
there's
go through and give all 5 or 6 points, and then the headline, and then okay. Let's go through each one more in more depth.
First drive, I did not like how the offense moving down the field, and then all of a sudden they switch it up and bring Ian Book. Everyone, the whole group of us that was watching the football game knew exactly what play they were going to run. So you clearly know what Vanderbilt was going to prepare for. I did not like it, just how it was a rhythm, and they switched it up. I did not like the Wimbush in and out there. Next thing was a penalty, Claypool penalty, 12th man on the field, 5-yard penalty. And guess what? Notre Dame went 3 and out, and they were 3 yards short of the first down. Stupid mistake that could have got him a first down. Then another one was Claypool. I'm going to be hard on Claypool in this podcast because I was not impressed with him. He dropped a third down pass. Nobody near him, just completely dropped it, and it was a field goal instead of what could have been a potential touchdown. And then Pride. Troy Pride, interception, awesome play, but coming out of the end zone. Put the offense horrible position, and they didn't go 3 and out, but they didn't move the ball very far. Horrible position. They would have, yeah. Anyways, next one, the 4th and 8, Troy Pride pass interference. There was no reason to have pass interference. The pass wasn't close, wouldn't have been caught anyways. And what would have been a drive-ending play, would have turned the ball over on downs, became a touchdown for Vanderbilt. Missed field goal by Justin Yoon would have put Notre Dame up by 8 points, and then you wouldn't have had Vanderbilt driving for the go-ahead touchdown there at the end of the game. So right. Those there you have 6 different things. Yeah, none of them are that big, but you get change 3 of those, half of them, this game wouldn't have been that close, and it would completely change the game.
And to be fair, there's probably 6 things that Vanderbilt fans could say that, oh, if these little things would have went our way, we would have won the game. However, this is what the great teams do. They don't leave it up to those 6 plays that you need to get 1 or 2 of them right just to win. They do those 6 things, and you blow teams out.
Yeah. And I think everybody, the team all around played, they did better than last week. But in each phase of the game, special teams, defense, offense, they all had a couple mistakes on each level that cost them in this game. So this game was that close to being a multi-touchdown win for Notre Dame.
And you know what it really comes down to is that Wimbush didn't throw the ball away. And if he'd have thrown the ball away just that one time like I wanted him to.
Book didn't either, which tells me clearly they're not coached to do it.
I'm joking, obviously, but I do want to see them throw the ball away.
I know, but when Book didn't do it either,
maybe
and actually I believe he lost a yard, told me that they're not being coached to throw it away.
Which,
when both quarterbacks are doing it.
And I remember Tommy Rees, I'd say he was the king of throwing the ball away. Didn't he throw the ball away a lot? He clearly wasn't scrambling
Kyle
away.
Was the Tommy Rees. He was all about Tommy Rees when Tommy was quarterback, and he was watching the game with us, and I did make a comment about how Tommy's telling him not to because he's still worried that it might get intercepted somehow. So,
but let's go back through the first one. Claypool, or it wasn't Claypool. It was
the first drive.
Bringing Ian Book in on the opening drive. Notre Dame is moving the ball. It looks like they're in a rhythm. They bring Ian Book in. You hate it because you think it stops the momentum. My argument is they've done it three other times, and they've scored touchdowns. And you're saying, well, of course Vanderbilt's going to be expecting it. But on the other hand, if something's working, keep on doing it.
Ruben, how often do you see a trick play that works being run multiple times?
Very rarely.
Exactly. This it works one time, be happy with it,
but Randall,
and move on.
This...
This was the worst case scenario because the offense was moving the ball. Tony Jones, he's my offense player of the game. He had a phenomenal game. I mean, he stepped it up and had a monster game that I was not expecting. Was a starting running back. They were moving the ball. Jones was running. Wimbush was running. Wimbush was completing passes. They get all the way down into the red zone and... And then they bring in Ian Book to run this play that we know has worked in other weeks. We all called it before they did anything.
Okay.
And guess what? They did it and they got stuffed.
But guess what happened several quarters later when they did the exact same thing again, except this time it was play action, touchdown, Nick Wisher.
Okay. I would have been fine if the offense would have been struggling to move the ball. They're moving the ball. Brandon Wimbush owns the Notre Dame record for rushing touchdowns by a quarterback. So... his strength is that red zone. I don't care. If you want to use Book, use him in the first 10 yards at the other end of the field, which they did. But you want to use Book, use him somewhere else, and then you would think once they get to the goal line, that's when you make sure that Wimbush is on the field. Well, the other thing clearly, they did, there was other players in there. Instead of Tony Jones, they brought in Jafar Armstrong. So there you don't even have the same running back. And it looked like some of the linemen, Aaron Banks was even in there. Why are they doing that?
Well, clearly Chip Long thinks that the red zone efficiency from last year had more to do with the offense system and the play calling than it did with Wimbush.
And I totally disagree with that. I think it was with Wimbush. I mean, it made me so upset when I saw that happen. It's not, and everybody thinks, I'm a Wimbush fan, I am. It's not that it has nothing to do with Book. It doesn't. It's about how the quarterbacks were used.
Yeah. We disagree a little bit about can it be effective having two quarterbacks with a role other than one just clearly being the backup. You think it's a terrible idea that don't even try it. And I think it can work. And I'm of the mindset if it is working, I'm not going to complain. I'm going to endorse it.
Here's the other thing. When they bring in Book, even the other one where they made the touchdown, that was a high pass. You're bringing in a cold quarterback off the bench to do that. He missed the other. All of his passes were extremely high, and they didn't get the one. It was an incompletion because it was too high.
Well, so incompletion? No, he didn't have an incompletion, but it was short of the first down. The
2-point conversion was an incompletion.
Oh. He was 3 for 3.
Well, did they? No, because it didn't work on the 2-point conversion. Anyways, it's just a bad... everything is wrong with that situation. I don't care if your quarterbacks are named Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. I mean, that's just the whole... that's just a bad situation all around.
Well, we disagree on it. And I would argue that it has been working most of the time. It's worked.
Oh, I agree. But... you can't always.
But you want to score touchdowns.
Beat a dead horse.
Over field goals. All right. Well,
so that could have been a touchdown.
Okay.
It should have been a touchdown.
And then, okay, point number two. There's a penalty. There's 12 men on the field. Claypool is the one that is supposed to be out. Now, is that a coach's fault? Is that Claypool's fault? It's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell.
I couldn't see who Brian Kelly was yelling at, or if Claypool was being yelled at, or if no one was being yelled at. I'm assuming if it was Claypool's fault, I'm sure he got yelled at by someone. I didn't see it on the TV.
The reason, it's probably a combination of both coaching and Claypool, but he was the guy that wasn't supposed to be out there. So some responsibility's got to be taken by him and the coaching staff. So it was obviously him, and that caused him. Seems like a small thing, but you run the exact same plays they did. I mean, you can argue that, oh, well, they knew they were back 5 yards, so they should have run it different. But still, it was a dumb mistake that cost them a couple yards, and it should not have. I mean, you can't say that was going to turn into a touchdown, but they wouldn't have gone 3 and out.
All right, and then your next point was...
Claypool again.
A Claypool drop, third down, Notre Dame settles for a field goal instead of converting and potentially getting a touchdown. I want to insert here, Fink also had a big drop, and I think it was also on third down.
I don't remember what down it was. I agree, that was very unusual. I don't think it was third down.
Beginning of the season, I was probably the most critical. I was very critical of the wide receiver group as a unit. I didn't think that they were going to produce because they hadn't done it a year earlier, and I was just very skeptical that they were going to produce. Miles Boykin had a huge game a week ago versus Ball State, a huge second half explosion, came out, did extremely well. However, I'm again very disappointed in the output from these wide receivers, making key mistakes like penalties and then also dropping... And they're not going to catch every ball, but at least drop the ones that are difficult and catch the ones that are easy.
Well, my turn, this was Claypool's chance to step up because Miles Boykin was being covered by a very good cornerback that was same size as him.
He didn't have the height advantage as he has in every other game.
You kept hearing it from the announcer during the game, too, that you know this was a great matchup for both of them. It was tough, and they were both fighting for it, and... I mean, we can get into it when we talk about the wide receivers, but Boykin should have done some things different as well. But this was a chance for Claypool to step up and be that second guy that can take over if your number one guy is being covered. And he did a very poor job of that. And clearly some other receivers got in the mix. Kevin Austin. We saw Michael Young finally, and I think he should see more time. Michael Young should be out there.
And here's another key another indicator that I think the wide receiver unit is not producing. Your tight ends are being targeted more and catching more. Alzheimer Mack had 3 catches for 25 yards. Tony Jones Jr. was the second leading. No, he actually hit the most yards out of all the, he hit the most receiving yards, 56 yards. There's being more plays made in the passing game by tight ends and receivers than there were, tight ends and running backs than there was receivers. Fink had 5 catches for 6 yards. Please. And I know some of that, it isn't always on them. Sometimes, sometimes blocking plays into it where really did miss a block on one of the screen passes, and it wasn't going anywhere regardless of quarterback or receiver at that point. But again, the wide receivers, I think, had a really good game a week ago. I was really disappointed in their ability to catch the ball and then just to get open and make plays.
Yeah, and we'll get into more of that with the wide receivers. There's a lot of things that could be fixed on that they could be better at. But, I mean, that drop on third down for Claypool, that was huge. Notre Dame kicked a field goal, but they were knocking on the door. They should have been able, they would have had a first down there and a chance to score a touchdown. So there's more points that are left out in the field.
And I don't think this isn't a talent thing. I think it is partially coaching, and I think part of it comes down to Chase Claypool.
In the big game against Michigan,
you know, he caught that on the opening drive, caught that pass, and turned it upfield for more than a first down. He has the ability to do it. I just don't think he's dialed in against these opponents that he, for some reason, deems, not as potent or not as worthy.
Yeah.
All right. Your next one was Pride, after making a great play, making the interception, he was definitely in position. He should have caught it. He did catch it, but then he takes it out of the end zone and is tackled at the 1 yard line. Notre Dame is running the ball heavily on first down against. No, I probably can't find it.
Well,
I do have it here. Against Vanderbilt, Notre Dame had 33 plays on first down, and they ran the ball 26 times. And this is pretty close to percentage-wise what they did against Michigan and against Ball State. Notre Dame is definitely a run-oriented team. That's who they want to be. That's who they are. That means that a lot of responsibility is going to be on the defense to hold points down. Notre Dame isn't going to they're not going to be as explosive running the ball as much as they are without the running back and offensive line they had last year. So the defense needs to do everything they can to help put the offense in the best position, and Troy Pride bringing that out of the end zone, that was just about him trying to get yards after the catch, make a play.
I mean, it's just that excited.
And it's not about the putting the team in the best position. And granted, yes, I don't know what it would be like to be in that kind of a position where you make a huge play. So he's playing. We're actually talking about him while we're watching the game. You know, has he lived up to the hype that was put on him in the fall camp and maybe in the spring a little bit too? He's definitely not Troy Love, or sorry, I mean my word
Julian Love.
Julian Love, but he has played very, very solid. Albeit he made some mistakes then too, and I think you're gonna one of your points is
he was the defensive player of the game. And I didn't think he made some good plays, but I would not have made him the defensive player of the game because he made some very costly mistakes, and that was one of them. Notre Dame's offense, you know, they tried to bring Book in and try to get it off the goal line, and which again doesn't make sense. But you know, you bring that out, it's a touchback. You bring that out, I mean, that's huge for this offense. And it was still when Notre Dame had a good lead, and they could have put the team away. They could have put Vanderbilt away. It was another opportunity to do that.
And shift
momentum.
Yeah. As soon as the ball started at the 1 yard line, I knew Notre Dame was going to punt. However, the people I was watching it with, some of our friends, Randall, are they delusional expecting just an automatic touchdown when you start at the 1 yard line?
Pretty much.
Please. I mean, you're not going to. That's why field position is a thing.
Yeah.
If you start at the 1 yard line, the chances of scoring a touchdown are null. Usually you end up giving the other team just good field position to attempt or have a great shot at a touchdown again.
Yeah, which is what happened. Anyway. So, and then the next one was Pride again, 4th and 8, pass interference. And yeah, the pass wasn't close, but it's 4th down. You got to be careful on that. I mean, you know it's 4th down, but I don't know. It was frustrating to see Derek Mason fuss and complain about calls, and then the next play get a pass. It wasn't this one, but get a pass interference call. That was very frustrating, which just means – I don't know what the refs are thinking, because that means they're just going to have more arguments, hear more from the coaches, because it clearly made a difference.
Probably my favorite moment of the game was when both Brian Kelly
and Derek Mason were
both giving it to the referees. I think Brian Kelly was asking, you know, where's the holding calls?
Yeah.
And Notre Dame did finally get a holding call. Good grief.
Yeah. And then the last point I had made was the missed field goal at the end that would have, I mean, Justin Yoon did a lot of good things, but at a critical time, that would have made it an 8-point game, and then the only thing Vanderbilt could have done was tie the game. But instead, yeah, they were driving for a go-ahead touchdown to win the game, and it looked very possible.
Well,
so just these right there, those 6 things, very critical mistakes, and that they could clean up. And if they would have just done half of those, I think they would have got a bigger lead on Vanderbilt. And they would have started to put them away. But like Brian Kelly says, they don't have that killer instinct. They just couldn't do it. They didn't have the instinct to those small things, just to do them and put Vanderbilt away early. That would have completely changed this game. And that's what was frustrating to me. It was just to see all these small mental mistakes.
And the good thing is, we touched on it, I think, last week, but at least Notre Dame, they can learn. It's I'd much rather have them learning their mistakes with a disappointing win,
exactly,
than a loss.
Oh, exactly.
I'd much rather be 3-0 and having a few weeks of lessons than be Wisconsin and coming off of a loss and needing to learn those lessons. Now, can Notre Dame learn these lessons? Can they can they be in like a legitimate contender for the playoff? I'm not as sure as I was, because I did expect Notre Dame to be putting teams away a little more easily than these last 2 weeks than they have been.
Yeah.
So they need to acquire that killer instinct. They need to be able to put teams away. And I think there's at different levels of the offense that this can happen. And I think there's some good signs. Are you finished talking about that? Are you getting ready to get into the position groups? Because I have a little spinoff, a little segue from some good signs that Notre Dame can build on.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, let's start with the offensive line and the running backs. Offensive line, that's something that I did expect to improve, partially through play calling, and they did play better. They were more improved. They didn't give up a sack. They only gave up, actually, I guess it was 5 tackles for loss that Vanderbilt did get. But
this was this team brings a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
We were expecting that coming in.
And we saw, I don't know if it was just communication. I do think part of it had to do with the way the plays were called as well, that helped the offensive line be a little more effective. But definitely the offensive blocking was better. Holes were being opened up for the running backs. And you mentioned your offensive player of the game, Randall.
Tony
Jones Jr. The guy's running hard. And Brian Kelly said it started at the end of last week, and he just had a great practice. It's incredible.
That was the Tony Jones that we heard about last year
as a freshman.
Yeah.
Because we've never seen it. I've never seen it on the field.
It was 2 years ago when he was redshirting. Because he did play last year, and we were disappointed with it because we heard all these great things about Tony Jones, how he was possibly the best running back on the team, and on and on. Well, we didn't see that last year. This week, he finally... we saw what he can do. I mean, he doesn't have that breakaway speed necessarily, but I don't think Dexter's going to be the closest thing to that. But clearly a guy that can make plays and catch the ball. And he did a good job blocking as well. And the offensive line, and Vanderbilt has been good against the run. And Notre Dame had 160-some yards before... or by halftime, and that's more than they've had in their first two games total at the end of in a complete game. So clearly that was much better, but they did slow it down then, and you know, obviously Vanderbilt made some adjustments, but it was good to see them be able to run the ball on a team that was supposed to be pretty good against the run.
And this wasn't one play, Tony Jones racked up 99 yards, and the rest of his 16 carries netted, you know, 17 yards. Or 19 yards. His long was 20 yards, and he averaged 6.9 yards. So this wasn't, I know, there's sometimes criticism about, it was all in one play, take that away, and the running game is terrible. Definitely wasn't the case on Saturday.
Yeah, and there was one time where Jones actually ran into Miles Boykin, and he still gained a couple yards after that. So he was running hard. He was hard to bring down. And it was just good to see that. And the offensive line, I mean, everything, they brought in a couple more guys. You know, Aaron Banks, Trevor Rulon played a little bit. I mean, they brought in some guys for a couple plays. Not sure what all was going on there. But the whole team just played better. After the game, Alex Barr said that that was by far Liam Eichenberg's best game communicating. He said the communication was so much better, and he was, you know, saw things before the play and was calling things that he hadn't done before. So it's good to see an improvement with all of that. It couldn't go down. I mean, it had to go up, and it did.
As long as the players stay healthy, the players in the team is going to get better. So they've got a good test away from home this next Saturday, and I'm glad they're playing, you know, Wake than they are opening up against Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
So it'll be a good test, and so hopefully we can continue to see some growth even when there is a little more noise for the offense.
Yeah, and with the offensive line, that was the other thing on that first drive. There was clearly some, I don't know what all happened, but there was a false start. And we've talked about this before with bringing multiple quarterbacks, just the timing with the offensive line and everything. You know, a couple years ago, we blamed Mike McGlinchey's false starts on playing Kaiser and Zaire, you know, just different time. Brian Kelly had talked about their cadence, just a bunch of everything. And it almost seemed like that happened. That happened on that first drive. The entire left side of the line moved, and the ball wasn't even snapped. So it's clear there was a timing issue there. And then Sam Mustipher did have one bad snap where Wimbush had to reach up for it and get that. We hadn't seen that in a long time. So hopefully he got that one out of the way and he's good to go for a while again.
And even that one wasn't so bad that it went over his head.
Yeah, but it did cause him. I think that's the play he threw it to Fink and it was low. And the announcer even talked about whether he did that on purpose, because it would have been a loss if Fink would actually get it. I doubt it, because we've seen Wimbush make those throws unintentionally. But it wasn't the dumbest play. It wasn't the worst thing that it hit the ground.
All right, tight ends, wide receivers. Alize Mack continues to be targeted, you know, consistently. He had 3 targets, 3 catches for 25 yards. Fink, Wisher, had 2 catches, including a touchdown.
Yeah. It's good to see. Brock Wright got his first reception. I had almost forgotten that he didn't have one. But he did get his first reception as well. And the blocking, Mack did have a nice one for Jones. One of the first plays of the game, the first drive, he had a really nice block for Tony Jones, helped him get a long run. But then, oh my goodness, he had some horrible ones. The one time he was completely taken off his feet. I mean, Alize Mack is how big, and they just completely took him off his feet. And he also, Mack's the one that almost got Fink killed the one time. He was supposed to be blocking and completely missed it. And Fink, I mean, I don't understand why they keep doing those passes out to the sideline, because, first of all, nobody can block for the receiver. And then, second of all, it's hard for Brandon Wimbush to throw the ball there. And it's just a combination of everything, and it just keeps getting done. And
although,
anyways,
his passing has improved out to the flats. Oh, I mean, drastically from a year ago.
Yeah, definitely. He made some of those passes, but they got blown up by a missed block.
Yeah.
So it's hard to do that for him, even knowing that his guy is probably going to get hit as soon as he catches it. So,
well, Randall, they're probably setting up the next play. Watch for a pump fake to the flat. And then Fink take off for, you know, wide open.
That is route, one thing that is line. Easy to forget. I mean, I know it's at the Michigan game, because, you know, everybody's, oh, they just keep running the same way, And then all of a sudden they break off long run, and everybody's like, oh, well, that's what they should have been doing. It was like, no, that it was set up like that. So it's often, as a fan, it's easy to forget that sometimes they're setting up for the next play. So.
Okay, anyone else on off? I mean, I guess, do you want to talk more about the quarterbacks?
Well, yeah, Brandon Wimbush, I thought, you look at his number, 13 and 23, that does not sound good at all. But it is, what, 56, 57%? And you throw in a Fink drop, Claypool drop, and Miles Boykin. Tell them more about the receivers with this. Miles Boykin, there was 2 passes that were behind Miles Boykin that he did not get. And he should have made one. That ball is supposed to be thrown behind him. He knew that it would be behind him. You saw the Vanderbilt players come back for it and make the pass. Miles Boykin was not doing that.
And so you're, often, it's not a crossing route. The one you're talking about is when he's running down the sideline.
Yes. And so it was going to be behind him, and Boykin did nothing to get to it. And so, okay, twice it happened in Atlanta. And, well, of course, we all want to blame Brandon Wimbush for a bad throw. But those 2 drops, and let's say Miles Boykin gets one of those, that would put Wimbush at over 70% passer rating.
You mean 70% completion?
Completion, not passer rating, but 70% completion, which is phenomenal. But Wimbush has 3 straight games over 50% passing, and he could not do that last year.
That's what I was, yes.
He's done it for 3 straight games, and he was running as well. And what I saw from him that I really liked is that it seemed there was a bad play, a drop or a bad play. I know he was getting after. I think he was trying to talk to the refs. He was complaining about something, whether it was the receivers or a call that wasn't made. After that, the next play, he usually makes a big play running or something. Like, he's not hanging his head and down about the play not working. He clearly, most of the time, he ran on the couple instances I saw, he ran for one time was a first down. The other one was a very close friend. Like, he took the game in his own hands and made a play happen.
I'm convinced,
like, he was frustrated, and so he made it happen.
I'm convinced, Randall, that Brandon Wimbush can do nothing to appease Notre Dame fans at this point. And it's sad because...
No, I agree.
Even aside from him completing 70% of his passes every game and having, you know, 3-1 touchdown to interception ratio, aside from that, and he's also probably still running for 75 yards, aside from those numbers, fans just don't want anything to do with him, and it's frustrating because he has markedly improved from where he was last year, and last year's offense was one of the most efficient running offenses Notre Dame has
red
ever
zone
seen.
Offense
and red
zone
offense
was insane
too. And a big part of that was him. I know I was kind of, you know, maybe going back and forth, is it Chip Long, is it Brandon Wimbush? I think it's partially both. Brandon Wimbush definitely is a huge factor in that, and he is passing for more accurately. Those short passes, I mean, he's hitting those at a much higher rate than last year. And
what seems to happen to the offense, like, they come out and just bam bam bam, I mean, they just keep running plays up tempo, and Brandon Wimbush does great at that. Also, Notre Dame gets a lead, and they start slowing it down, and that's when Wimbush struggles. I don't think you would see that with the other team. That's why in Alabama, you got to keep the pressure on, keep your up tempo, and I think the risk reward. It's high risk, high reward based. You can either put those teams away, and I think Notre Dame needs to do that. They can't slow it down. Brian Kelly said they're a grinded-out team. I don't want to hear that. They need to keep the up-tempo, keep the ball moving. That's where play to Wimbush's strength like they say they want to. And, yeah, he did great running the ball. That touchdown run, that's why he's the quarterback. I mean, that showed it. And that's why he needs to be in the game in the red zone. But we're finding out that there's a red zone, a blue zone, and a white zone.
Yeah. Is this the first you had heard about that from Brian Kelly's Sunday teleconference?
Yeah. Okay, basically, how they break it down, red zone is the 25-yard line to 15-yard line. Blue zone is 5-0. Or white zone is 14-6. Blue zone is 5-0.
And are you sure that's right? It's not, it's red, yeah,
red, white,
blue.
White, blue. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
And so blue zone, 5 yards and to the goal line is book.
Is he in book?
Makes no. Anyways.
Well, Randall, until they start, so far they've done well with getting touchdowns in the blue zone. So I'm going to wait to complain until, you know, it's like a 50-50 split or it's markedly worse than it was last year.
Why would you? It worked so well last year.
Well,
they haven't even given Wimbush a chance to do it this year.
Yeah.
And it worked so well last year.
And the only argument I can give, or reason I can give, is that they want Brandon Wimbush to be the quarterback all the way through November and to keep him healthy. And to do that, they're trying to take away snaps from him, which I've talked about that before the season started, that we need to take snaps away from Brandon so he's healthy for the entire season. And so I don't know if that's their thinking.
Yeah, well, one other thing with the quarterback. Well, Brandon Wimbush said the media wanted him to grade out his performance again. He said he was told that that's not a good idea to do that, and so he didn't do it this time, which I think is good. There was way too much dissecting of that comment last week. But Brandon Wimbush keeps saying about how the first 9 plays are scripted. And then Brian Kelly comes out and says, no, we don't script any plays. No, none of it's scripted. So that was kind of interesting. But that seems to be an issue. Those first, they come out, move the ball. And some of it is the offense or the opposing defense adjusting to the game plan.
And the defense
but
doesn't want to get...
I think it also has to do with Notre Dame going up-tempo and playing aggressive and then all of a sudden slowing it down and playing more conservative.
I think the tempo is huge, and I think the defenses on both sides are sitting back a little bit, watching what the offense is going to try to do, what they're going to try to exploit. Notre Dame has done great in opening series defensively, and I think I think part of that just goes to Coach Lee for having a defense that, even though in its maybe a more simple form, is still a very stout defense that doesn't give up a whole lot of yards, you know, after the catch, and is able to put a little bit of pressure on the quarterback, even in just in their kind of vanilla plain defense.
Yeah.
They have the players that are getting it done. Obviously, if you have Tavon Coney and Drew Tranquil in the middle of the defense, I mean, good things are going to happen.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is there was Brian Wimbush took a step forward. He had pressure on him, and he still completed throws. Defenders in his face, and he was still completing throws, and he had no turnovers. We heard comments last week about how he's another Everett Golson with the turnovers, but no interceptions and no fumbles. So that's huge. And then with Book, I mean, Book did good with the situations he was put in. Coming in cold like that, and yeah, I just think they need to be, if they're going to use Book, do it in a different situation.
Notre Dame didn't attack downfield nearly as much as they did the first 2 weeks. Do you think that was partially because they were trying to take a little bit of pressure off the offensive line in protecting Wimbush, and just trying to, they took shots downfield, but not to the extent that they did the first 2 weeks?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they had good coverage. They played good. Vanderbilt played good defense, especially on Miles Boykin. I mean, they did play good defense. So it's hard to tell on some of that, you know, what was different exactly. But
all right, so we move over to defense.
Yeah, I think I've gone off enough about the wide receivers. They need to do, if Claypool doesn't step up, they got us, which they were giving more reps to Michael Young and Kevin Austin. I mean, didn't really take advantage of it. I mean, they're out there, but Chase Claypool. Oh, the one pass I didn't mention. There was one game that was, it was in front of him. It was a touch pass from Brandon Wimbush, and Claypool didn't quite get there, and it looked like he was just slowing down. He just wasn't putting a lot of effort into it. And you keep seeing that if the ball's not going straight, he doesn't put a lot of air. And as soon as the ball's thrown, he stops. He's not one of those guys, like Brian Kelly said. He mentioned with the defense how they last week they just ran to the cone. This week they ran through the cone. And that's what made a difference on a lot of defensive plays. Well, on offense, Claypool is not running through the cone. He's slowing down. By the time he gets to the cone, he's stopped. And that's his. That's been his problem at Notre Dame. He could be a great receiver, but I don't know.
The good news is there is young talent there. The problem is that young talent at wide receiver at Notre Dame doesn't usually turn into a whole lot of production. Stefferson was the most productive freshman wide receiver, you know, in the past, at least the past 8 years. I don't know how long ago, but it's just unlikely that one of these guys is going to step up, one of these freshmen is going to step up and really make a huge contribution.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, defense.
I thought the defense played pretty good. Yeah, they made some mistakes, but Vanderbilt does not give up a lot of sacks and does not allow a lot of pressure. So what Notre Dame did, especially with the holding calls that weren't called, I mean, Khalid Kareem got thrown to the ground and had to come out of the game. There was another one. Was it Okora that got held? I mean, right there, there's some more plays that could have made a big difference. They could have had a sack or tackle for loss that could have changed Vanderbilt's drives.
Completely agree. And I think this defense, you could see they were wearing down. And I think that's when some of the penalties against Notre Dame's defense started piling up, was when they were getting a little more gassed at the end of the fourth quarter.
And that's the problem. They're playing a lot.
That is
snaps.
The problem. And that's what is going to be a problem. Okay, fine. You can grind it out this first month and beat teams like Ball State and Vanderbilt. You're not going to keep on beating teams. You're not going to beat for sure a Stanford, for sure a Virginia Tech. It's going to get tougher as these guys keep on piling on the amount of snaps they're taking.
Yeah, I agree. And something's got to change, because they're going to end up with a November like they've had before with this defense. But I do will get Vanderbilt as a very good quarterback. Totally blank on his name. Shermer,
yeah.
He's a very good quarterback, and he made a lot of throws. He made some very good throws. I mean, there was good coverage. There was good defense, guys in his face, and he made some good throws. So there were some of those on that offense. There wasn't a whole lot Notre Dame could change about it. I mean, they were just playing a good quarterback. So,
all right, defensive line, we mentioned it, but I can't wait to see what this defensive line can do when the offense is held accountable and holding calls are being called, because once they're let loose, like they are gonna wreak havoc with I think almost any offensive line. I mean, again, we're not facing Alabama, but against the offensive lines they've been facing, it would be incredible how much more impressive their numbers would be if the offensive linemen would be held accountable.
Yeah, I know. And it doesn't make sense. I believe it was ACC officials on the field. I mean, I hate the official bias, but, you know, it does happen. But this is – I don't know what's going on.
And that linebacker, Jude Tranquil, or do you have more about the defensive line?
Well, just feeling – I mean, Khalid Kareem had a tackle for a loss, a six-yard loss, big play on that. Tillery forced the fumble. Vanderbilt somehow recovered it, but Tillery did force a fumble. So, you know, there's another play that went Vanderbilt's way that, you know, could have gone either way. Even when Kurt Heinisch came in on the end of the game, he brought some pressure on the one play. So that was good to see that some of these lesser-used backup linemen are still getting pressure on the quarterback against a pretty good offensive line. Adeo Gundiji was doing some good stuff, and Kareem could have got called for roughing the passer earlier in the game. Looked like he was trying to get the guy a hug, but it didn't get called. But then they did call it on Okora, and that was a costly mistake. Those penalties are hard. Anyways, I almost think that was maybe called because the one on Kareem wasn't called earlier. And then, the play that Okora got held on was 3rd and 10. So if you would have made that play, it would have been 4th down. I mean, it could have been ending a drive, but didn't get called, and the drive kept going.
Saw some other Drew Tranquil was in there. Of course, Bonner was in there as well. So their backups are getting snaps, but there's still too many snaps being put on the first string guys.
Yeah. Which we did find out about some injuries last week to the backup linebackers, so that made a difference against Ball State, why they weren't rotating as much. But in this game, Coney and Tranquil are just always around the ball. I mean, there was multiple plays where they were both, one was bringing pressure and the other one was making the tackle. I mean, those two working together is just amazing to see. And the one Tranquil blitzed the one time, and the running back tried to block him, and he got destroyed.
I tweeted out something
about how next time the running back sees Tranquil come, he's just going to step out of the way because he got hammered on that one. Coney, I believe Coney was the one that knocked down the ball.
He was credited with one pass breakup.
Okay,
yeah.
So he didn't knock down the ball in that one play, but those two guys just continue to play great. Asmir Bilal was kind of up and down. There was times when he was behind. He did make some plays, but, I mean, he's definitely not up to the level of Coney and Tranquil. But.
And then the defensive backs.
Griffith got his start at nickel. And what happened to Nick Coleman? He didn't even play. All of a sudden, you know, we see him a lot, and they bring in Griffith at the end. Well, then Griffith comes in and we don't see Nick Coleman.
Do you think
Coleman was doing some good things last week?
Yeah. Do you think it mean injury or he's lost some of the traits?
I don't know. But Griffith, you can tell he's a freshman.
Yeah.
I mean, he was, you know, his angles and getting turned around and headed the right, just some of his stuff is just off, and he's clearly a freshman. He did some good thing, made some big plays, but he also messed up some. So that's what makes it a little shine not to see Coleman out there a little more. But I don't know.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure we'll find out what's going on.
He was so gassed from the week before.
If he comes back next week and Brian Kelly just kind of shrugs it off like it was nothing, it was probably some kind of disciplinary thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know what it is. If it was anything.
Yeah. Pride. Well, okay, first of all, Julian Love just keeps playing phenomenal, knocking down passes. I mean, it's not going to be long. Is he the leader now?
He's not the leader.
Not quite.
But
for pass breakups.
Isn't he second now?
Yeah, I believe
second
so.
Second or third?
And he just continues to do it well, so the ball gets thrown Pride's direction a lot more, which makes it harder for him. And he was up and he was defensive player of the game, but I wouldn't have picked him as defensive player of the game just because of some critical mistakes he made.
Well, and to be fair, Julian Love also had a pass interference.
Yes.
On the those closing drives.
Yeah. But Pride's pass interference resulted in a touchdown. Coming out of the end zone, put the offense in a bad position. But then he did have a big pass breakup on some critical downs. And then Dante Vaughn was brought in for just a couple plays, and he's brought in on a fourth down there at the end of the game and was called for pass interference. I mean, there again, why are you bringing him in on a fourth down, critical situation? It doesn't make sense.
Who did he come in for?
I'm not even sure. Did Griffith come off the field and Love moved to the... I know they've been doing that some. I don't know if it was that exact play, but I know they have moved Love to the nickel already and brought in Vaughn. They did that a couple times. I'm not sure it was that exact play. But why do you bring in a guy that hasn't been playing and then also bring him in a critical down and he makes a critical mistake? You feel bad for Vaughn. He shouldn't have made that play, but he didn't really even have a chance. But anyways.
And then safeties. How about the most exciting play of this season for sure?
That was insane. That was the most exciting play in a couple of years. I mean.
Well, I was trying to think of one from last season that was that exciting, and I don't think there was one close to that exciting. I mean.
I think the last time I got that excited about one single play was the touchdown against USC. Was it 2 years ago? Or was it 3 years? When they blocked, when there's like six Notre Dame.
I think it was 2015.
I think it was 2015. That's the one play I remember where half the team was running the ball into the end zone.
But yeah, clearly didn't think it was going to be necessary, but clearly ended up being a necessary play from defense.
And how long has it been, especially with the safeties, but just the Notre Dame defense, going in that situation, Gilman going for the strip? Yeah. Ripping the ball away like that. That usually when it happens, it's just by chance. The helmet hit it and it popped out. But Troy Pride did a great job keeping him out of the end zone, first of all. And then Gilman thinking about taking the ball away, just reached there and popped it out. Well, and then Love somehow hanging on to that.
Yeah.
I mean,
the defensive backfield just as a whole continues to be very impressive.
Yeah. Making plays. And That play there, and then when Elliott, the last play, the fourth down play for Vanderbilt, when it looked like the receiver caught it, and Elliott went all the way down to the ground with him, and whether Elliott knocked it out or the ground did, Elliott kept playing through. And with that turnover there, that showed what Brian Kelly was talking about, how they played through the cone versus just to the cone. And they kept going for it. So that was good to see from the defense. And again, I think they were playing a good quarterback. They were playing a great quarterback, and they were going to give up some yards.
All right, anything from special teams, Randall? We talked about how he did miss that one that would have made this it would have kept Vanderbilt at the end from winning the game, but it would have been able to tie it. But obviously he did make a handful of field goals as well.
Tyler Newsom punting, which obviously there were touchbacks on some of those, but absolutely booming kicks. And that last one, I don't think I've ever seen a punt like that. It almost looked, just watching it, you could see the force, and it looked like the ball almost went flat when Newsom kicked it. But if you look at the time, it was in the air for almost 6 seconds. And even is it McAfee, the Colts' former punter that retired?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He even tweeted out about it today.
Oh, I didn't see that.
And had a highlight. I mean, obviously he was watching at home and he videoed it and gave him a shout out. But someone said that basically to see a punt, was it 63 yards?
I don't even remember 60 now some yards, was.
And it being fair caught is unbelievable.
Well, but it was fair caught because they were running out of time. They didn't want to run it back.
But they were right there. He had 6 seconds of hang time on that.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it was incredible. Either way,
he broke his own record of averaging the most yards per punt for the game. So he did move it up. And then I thought, was it you or was it Kyle that jinxed Justin Yoon because he kept saying about how he's an NFL kicker? Was that Kyle?
Number one, jinxing has nothing to do with it. I'll go talk about injuries or missing field goals or missing punts however often I want to. But it was Kyle.
Yes, he was telling his wife that, she doesn't know much about Notre Dame football, and he was telling her that, this is an NFL kicker. And then Yoon misses a kick.
I didn't hear that. That's hilarious.
Anyway, but then Jonathan Dewar started out not very good, but then he proceeded to kick the ball out of the end zone for touchbacks.
I hope that's what they go to. Just kick it out of the end zone, unless Notre Dame has blown out a team and they just want to work on punting at the 5-yard line to try to make the return men make a bad decision. But until it's a blowout, just kick it out of the end zone.
Yeah. And then Michael Young, as a return guy, I think he needs to stay there. Was it a 49-yard return?
48.
And that looked, you could see the speed.
Yeah.
And I think they need to keep him there because he looked like a guy that could break one at some point. And I would say they've found the return guy. They've tried a couple other guys, but I hope they stick with Michael Young.
Especially if you're getting what you want in the running game with Tony Jones Jr., you kind of have a good thing going right now. I agree. Keep him out of the special teams return game and let Michael Young see what he can do.
Yeah.
All right, I don't have anything else. Do you have anything more, Randall?
No, I forgot to pick out the winner for the score prediction, so I will do that. And those of you that have gotten your coffee, the mugs are coming, so we didn't forget about it. You guys ordered your coffee quickly and got sent out before I got the mugs sent out. So,
well, Randall, they have 30 days. The coupon for the free pint of coffee expires after 30 days. So I make sure that, because we don't want something in 10 years to come back and try to use it. And Main Street Roasters doesn't know how did this person get a free pound of coffee when coffee in 10 years from now is probably going to be about $30 a pound. But it would be worth it.
Yeah.
Main Street Roasters is our score prediction sponsor, and you can follow them on Instagram and Facebook at Main Street Roasters. You can check out their coffee online, mainstreetroasters.com. It is the coffee of choice for Irish Sports Talk, and not just because they're a sponsor. They've been a coffee of choice for a long time, and you can find them online, mainstreetroasters.com. Be sure when you do buy their coffee that you mention that you're a fan of Irish Sports Talk so that they know that we're sending you over to them. Randall.
I had put out a question on our Instagram page, or it said ask a question for the podcast, and we did get some of those, and we'll be answering those on the next podcast.
We did also get some responses to some tweets one tweet that sent out, what are your thoughts or what do you want to discuss for this game? Let's just get to one of those real quick. With Wimbush having a career 50.5% completion rate, it is obvious that offense coordinator has pared down playbook, hence limiting its creativity. Will this hurt Notre Dame against top opponents? I guess my question is, do Notre Dame fans trust Wimbush?
No, you kind of mentioned it, and I also said it about Brian Kelly. I think it's been long enough that I think about everybody's changed their mind. People have kind of made up their mind about Brian Kelly, and they've kind of made up their mind about Wimbush. And honestly, I don't know what's going to need to happen to change that either way. I mean, the ones that think Brandon should be replaced are going to keep thinking that, and the ones that think he should stay quarterback are going to keep thinking that as well. I mean, and with Brian Kelly, some think it, you know, that nothing's going to change. I think there's still hope, and I think it's not just going to be the next few games. I mean, it's going to take a lot more, and I honestly don't know what it's going to take to change that.
And while I do think that the offense is sometimes dumbed down or change to not be as effective for Brandon, I did think that way definitely against Ball State, but more to work on something for Brandon, not necessarily to, it wasn't to play to his strength, the offense that Notre Dame was calling for majority of the game anyway, against Ball State. I think Brandon Wimbush has the skills to lead a dynamic offense. He's become a better quarterback. That is clear. Yeah. He's a better quarterback. Yeah. I don't think he's holding back the offense. I think that maybe the offense needs to continue to be called for him in situations where Notre Dame needs a great offensive performance to win, which would be against teams like Stanford, Michigan, you know, probably Florida State, maybe not, they look kind of bad, but some of those opponents.
Yeah, well, one of the biggest, greatest things this weekend was that Herb Street once again predicted Notre Dame to lose, so he did that against Michigan as well. I'm not sure what he picked against Ball State. I'm sure he didn't pick Ball State, but it's always good to see when they're wrong. So,
all right, that's all there is to it. Thank you guys for listening. Check out the forums, forums.irishsportstalk.net. It is free. And until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.